Chapter 13. Seen that face before. Mrs. Blinder got up and walked over to the looking glass. Dee dear me. I must have been asleep, she says. My front is all over one ear. And now do run along, Miss Hartley, dear, for I hear the clock striking four, and I must go down this very minute, and put on the Virginia ham for Mr. Brimpton's dinner. Ivy. To all appearances, things went on as usual for a week or two. The only difference was that Mr. Brimpton stayed on, instead of going off as he usually did, and that Mr. Ranford never showed himself. I heard Mr. Brimpton remark on this one afternoon, when he was sitting in my mistress's room before dinner. "Where's Ranford?" says he. "He hasn't been near the house for a week. Does he keep away because I'm here?" Mrs. Brimpton spoke so low that I couldn't catch her answer. "Well," he went on, "two's company and three's trumpery. I'm sorry to be in Ranford's way, and I suppose I shall have to take myself off again in a day or two, and give him a show." And he laughed at his own joke. The very next day, as it happened, Mr. Ranford called. The footman said the three were very merry over their tea in the library, and Mr. Brimpton strolled down to the gate with Mr. Ranford when he left. I have said that things went on as usual, and so they did with the rest of the household. But as for myself, I had never been the same since the night my bell had rung. Night after night I used to lie awake, listening for it to ring again, and for the door of the locked room to open stealthily. But the bell never rang, and I heard no sound across the passage. At last the silence began to be more dreadful to me than the most mysterious sounds. I felt that someone were cowering there, behind the locked door, watching and listening as I watched and listened, and I could almost have cried out, "Whoever you are, come out and let me see you face to face, but don't lurk there and spy on me in the darkness." Feeling as I did, you may wonder I didn't give warning. Once I very nearly did so, but at the last moment something held me back. Whether it was compassion for my mistress, who had grown more and more dependent on me, or unwillingness to try a new place, or some other feeling that I couldn't put a name to, I lingered on, as if spellbound, though every night was dreadful to me, and the days but little better. For one thing, I didn't like Mrs. Brimpton's looks. As he had never been the same since that night, no more than I had. I thought she would brighten up after Mr. Brimpton left, but though she seemed easier in her mind, her spirits didn't revive, nor her strength either. As he had grown attached to me, and seemed to like to have me about, and Agnes told me one day that, since Emma Saxon's death, I was the only maid her mistress had taken to. This gave me a warm feeling for the poor lady, though after all there was little I could do to help her. After Mr. Brimpton's departure, Mr. Ranford took to coming again, though less often than formerly. I met him once or twice in the grounds, or in the village, and I couldn't but think there was a change in him too, but I set it down to my disordered fancy. The weeks passed, and Mr. Brimpton had now been a month absent. We heard he was cruising with a friend in the West Indies, and Mr. Wace said that was a long way off, but though you had the wings of a dove, and went to the uttermost parts of the earth, you couldn't get away from the Almighty. Agnes said that, as long as he stayed away from Brimpton, the Almighty might have him and welcome, and this raised a laugh, though Mrs. Blinder tried to look shocked, and Mr. Wace said the bears would eat us. We were all glad to hear that the West Indies were a long way off, and I remember that, in spite of Mr. Wace's solemn looks, we had a very merry dinner that day in the hall. I don't know if it was because of my being in better spirits, but I fancied Mrs. Brimpton looked better too, and seemed more cheerful in her manner. As he had been for a walk in the morning, and after luncheon she lay down in her room, and I read aloud to her. When she dismissed me, I went to my own room feeling quite bright and happy, and for the first time in weeks walked past the locked door without thinking of it. As I sat down to my work I looked out, and saw a few snowflakes falling. The sight was pleasanter than the eternal rain, and I pictured to myself how pretty the bare gardens would look in their white mantle. It seemed to me as if the snow would cover up all the dreariness, indoors as well as out. The fancy had hardly crossed my mind when I heard a step at my side. I looked up, thinking it was Agnes. "Well, Agnes," said I, and the words froze on my tongue, for there, in the door, stood Emma Saxon. I don't know how long she stood there. I only know I couldn't stir or take my eyes from her. Afterward I was terribly frightened, but at the time it wasn't fear I felt, but something deeper and quieter. She looked at me long and long, and her face was just one dumb prayer to me, but how in the world was I to help her? Suddenly she turned, and I heard her walk down the passage. This time I wasn't afraid to follow. I felt that I must know what she wanted. I sprang up and ran out. She was at the other end of the passage, and I expected her to take the turn toward my mistress's room, but instead of that she pushed open the door that led to the back stairs. I followed her down the stairs, and across the passageway to the back door. The kitchen and hall were empty at that hour, the servants being off duty, except for the footman, who was in the pantry. At the door she stood still a moment, with another look at me. Then she turned the handle, and stepped out. For a minute I hesitated. Where was she leading me to? The door had closed softly after her, and I opened it and looked out, half expecting to find that she had disappeared. But I saw her a few yards off, hurrying across the courtyard to the path through the woods. Her figure looked black and lonely in the snow, and for a second my heart failed me, and I thought of turning back. But all the while she was drawing me after her, and catching up an old shawl of Mrs. Blinder's, I ran out into the open. Emma Saxon was in the wood path now. She walked on steadily, and I followed at the same pace, till we passed out of the gates, and reached the high road. Then she struck across the open fields to the village. By this time the ground was white, and as she climbed the slope of a bare hill ahead of me, I noticed that she left no footprints behind her. At sight of that, my heart shriveled up within me, and my knees were water. Somehow, it was worse here than indoors. She made the whole countryside seem lonely as the grave, with none but us two in it, and no help in the wide world. Once I tried to go back, but she turned and looked at me, and it was as if she had dragged me with ropes. After that I followed her like a dog. We came to the village, and she led me through it, past the church and the blacksmith's shop, and down the lane to Mr. Ranford's. Mr. Ranford's house stands close to the road. A plain old-fashioned building, with a flagged path leading to the door between box borders. The lane was deserted, and as I turned into it, I saw Emma Saxon pause under the old elm by the gate. And now another fear came over me. I saw that we had reached the end of our journey, and that it was my turn to act. All the way from Brimpton I had been asking myself what she wanted of me, but I had followed in a trance, as it were, and not till I saw her stop at Mr. Ranford's gate did my brain begin to clear itself. It stood a little way off in the snow, my heart beating fit to strangle me, and my feet frozen to the ground, and she stood under the elm and watched me. I knew well enough that she hadn't led me there for nothing. I felt there was something I ought to say or do, but how was I to guess what it was? I had never thought harm of my mistress and Mr. Ranford, but I was sure now that, from one cause or another, some dreadful thing hung over them. She knew what it was. She would tell me if she could. Perhaps she would answer if I questioned her. It turned me faint to think of speaking to her, but I plucked up heart and dragged myself across the few yards between us. As I did so, I heard the house door open and saw Mr. Ranford approaching. He looked handsome and cheerful, as my mistress had looked that morning, and at sight of him the blood began to flow again in my veins. "Why, Hartley," said he, "what's the matter? I saw you coming down the lane just now, and came out to see if you had taken root in the snow." He stopped and stared at me. "What are you looking at?" he says. I turned toward the elm as he spoke, and his eyes followed me, but there was no one there. The lane was empty as far as the eye could reach. A sense of helplessness came over me. She was gone, and I had not been able to guess what she wanted. Her last look had pierced me to the marrow, and yet it had not told me. All at once, I felt more desolate than when S.E. had stood there watching me. It seemed as if S.E. had left me all alone to carry the weight of the secret I couldn't guess. The snow went round me in great circles, and the ground fell away from me. A drop of brandy and the warmth of Mr. Ranford's fire soon brought me to, and I insisted on being driven back at once to Brimpton. It was nearly dark, and I was afraid my mistress might be wanting me. I explained to Mr. Ranford that I had been out for a walk, and had been taken with a fit of giddiness as I passed his gate. This was true enough, yet I never felt more like a liar than when I said it. When I dressed Mrs. Brimpton for dinner, she remarked on my pale looks and asked what ailed me. I told her I had a headache, and she said she would not require me again that evening, and advised me to go to bed. It was a fact that I could scarcely keep on my feet, yet I had no fancy to spend a solitary evening in my room. I sat downstairs in the hall as long as I could hold my head up, but by 9 I crept upstairs, too weary to care what happened if I could but get my head on a pillow. The rest of the household went to bed soon afterward. They kept early hours, when the master was away, and before 10 I heard Mrs. Blinder's door close, and Mr. Wace's soon after. It was a very still night, earth and air all muffled in snow. Once in bed I felt easier, and lay quiet, listening to the strange noises that come out in a house after dark. Once I thought I heard a door open and close again below. It might have been the glass door that led to the gardens. I got up and peered out of the window, but it was in the dark of the moon, and nothing visible outside but the streaking of snow against the panes. I went back to bed, and must have dozed, for I jumped awake to the furious ringing of my bell. Before my head was clear, I had sprung out of bed, and was dragging on my clothes. "It is going to happen now," I heard myself saying, but what I meant I had no notion. My hand seemed to be covered with glue. I thought I should never get into my clothes. At last I opened my door and peered down the passage. As far as my candle flame carried, I could see nothing unusual ahead of me. I hurried on, breathless. But as I pushed open the baize door leading to the main hall, my heart stood still, for there at the head of the stairs was Emma Saxon, peering dreadfully down into the darkness. For a second I couldn't stir, but my hand slipped from the door, and as it swung shut the figure vanished. At the same instant there came another sound from below stairs, a stealthy mysterious sound, as of a latch key turning in the house door. I ran to Mrs. Brimpton's room and knocked. There was no answer, and I knocked again. This time I heard someone moving in the room, the bolt slipped back, and my mistress stood before me. To my surprise I saw that S.E. had not undressed for the night. She gave me a startled look. "What is this, Hartley?" she says in a whisper. "Are you ill? What are you doing here at this hour?" "I am not ill, madam, but my bell rang." At that she turned pale, and seemed about to fall. "You are mistaken," she said harshly. "I didn't ring. You must have been dreaming." I had never heard her speak in such a tone. "Go back to bed," she said, closing the door on me. But as she spoke I heard sounds again in the hall below. A man's step this time, and the truth leaped out on me. "Madam," I said, pushing past her, "there is someone in the house, someone, Mr. Brimpton, I think I hear his step below." A dreadful look came over her, and without a word, she dropped flat at my feet. I fell on my knees and tried to lift her. By the way she breathed I saw it was no common faint. But as I raised her head there came quick steps on the stairs, and across the hall. The door was flung open, and there stood Mr. Brimpton, in his traveling clothes, the snow dripping from him. He drew back with a start as he saw me kneeling by my mistress. "What the devil is this?" he shouted. He was less eye-colored than usual, and the red spot came out on his forehead. Mrs. Brimpton has fainted, sir, said I. He laughed unsteadily, and pushed by me. It's a pity she didn't choose a more convenient moment. I'm sorry to disturb her, but I raised myself up, aghast at the man's action. Sir, said I, are you mad? What are you doing? Going to meet a friend, said he, and seemed to make for the dressing room. At that my heart turned over. I don't know what I thought or feared, but I sprang up and caught him by the sleeve. Sir, sir, said I, for pity's sake look at your wife. He shook me off furiously. It seems that's done for me, says he, and caught hold of the dressing room door. At that moment I heard a slight noise inside. Slight as it was, he heard it too, and tore the door open, but as he did, so he dropped back. On the threshold stood Emma Saxon. All was dark behind her, but I saw her plainly, and so did he. He threw up his hands, as if to hide his face from her, and when I looked again she was gone. He stood motionless, as if the strength had run out of him, and in the stillness my mistress suddenly raised herself, and opening her eyes fixed a look on him. Then she fell back, and I saw the death flutter pass over her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.